Why do the other kids do everything differently? Is there something the matter with you?
I feel like the original seed of audacity that was planted in my mind was me being raised on a dirt road in Monk's Corner, South Carolina, population 7,000 people, and having the audacity to think that I could be the biggest multimedia personality in the world.
Has anyone ever told you you're too rebellious?
Or hot-blooded?
Arrogant?
Obsessive?
How about difficult?
Or maybe even a little weird?
Well, you might just be a rare breed. I'm Ashley Hansberger.
I'm Sunny Bonnell, and you're listening to Rare Breed, a podcast about people who harness the power of their vices and turn them into virtues.
We're coming at you from our offices in lower, crazy, noisy Manhattan. This is Rare Breed. How would you describe how you ended up with the name Charlemagne the God?
I used to sell crack. And when I used to sell crack, I used to always say that my name was Charles or Charlie. Because I'm from a real small town, Monk's Corner. At the time, the population might have been 7,000, 8,000. It's growing now because people have been fucking. But at the time, it was very small. So if people saw me, they would know immediately, that's Larry's son, that's Julie's son. So I'd be on the block with a hoodie on. And when people would pull up, I'd just be like, yo, my name is Charles or Charlie. And then, you know, we used to all smoke weed crazy back in the day. So we had a crew called the Infamous Buddha Heads. So all of us, like, took names and put nicknames for marijuana at the end. So I was Charlie Chronic. And like I had other homeboys who was like Bobby Buddha, Ichabodism, Mikey Marijuana, just real corny, dumb shit. One day I was sitting in night school and I was reading in a history book about Charlemagne, who is Charles the Great. And you know, Charlemagne is French for Charles the Great. So I just saw the name and was like, oh shit, that's cool. And then I started saying my name was Charlemagne because his dynasty was called the Carolinian Empire. So I'm from South Carolina, I'm a Carolinian. And they said he went about spreading religion and education. And those are two things that I'm big on, you know, not necessarily religion, more so spirituality. So I just was like, I'm gonna start calling myself Charlemagne.
We have some images that we got from the library of Charlemagne the Great. And we wanted to share them with you so you could look at these images.
I get flack for this now. People are like, you named yourself after a white Roman emperor.
I know, that's why we're like, what the fuck? When you see these images, the way that a person like this projects power, does that make you think anything about yourself and the way that you present yourself to the world?
Nah, because I don't think I'm that important.
You don't? But you're God.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that hang on your every word, though, so I think there's a lot of power in that.
It is, and it's something I'm very cognizant of. I think that's why in the past few years I've just understood the power of my words more. Because I think that a long time, I've always thought about the intention of things that I say. As long as the intention is good, like I'm not attempting to be malicious or I'm not attempting to be provocative or, you know, I don't believe there's no value in shock. I hate when people say, oh, you a shock jock. I don't believe there's no value in shock. So as long as I felt like everything was coming from a good place, it was cool. But I realized like that's not the case. You have to worry about impact sometimes. You know, you have to worry about impact all the time. Because, you know, just because my intention was good doesn't mean that I still didn't offend. Doesn't mean that I still didn't piss somebody off or trigger something in somebody, you know. So it's like, yeah, words are power. I worry more about impact now than I do intention because I understand the power of impact.
Because you've got your ass handed to you or because you've matured or
both, combination of both. I've always been a very self-aware person. You know, I don't need situations to happen to me for me to realize like, damn, that was wrong. Like I do have a moral compass. You know what I mean? I can think of a situation like when Floyd Mayweather, you know, when everybody was giving him flack for not being able to read. I had actual audio of him reading iHeartRadio drops and I played those on the air. And my intentions, even in that moment, weren't good because I was like, oh, shoot, Jimmy Kimmel's out here talking about it and 50 Cent said he'll give people money if they can get him to read a Dr. Seuss book, a Harry Potter book or whatever it was. And I was like, we got the actual audio. Oh, we're going on the air with that now.
Yeah.
And everybody in the studio was like, Charlemagne, no. And I'm like, fuck that. We need ratings too. I want to get these numbers. He's got to fight to sell. We got to fight to sell.
Yeah.
And I played it and it just didn't feel good. Nobody pressed me about it. I didn't get in any trouble from my job. I was just like, damn. And you know what made me feel bad? When I started getting all of these comments on social media and emails from people who really don't know how to read. So in my mind, I was like, I had no idea. Because think about it, that's something we take for granted. My mother was an English teacher growing up. I was the guy that read four books a week for the Book It program because I used to like pizza. You know, so you read four books, you get a free pizza. Y'all from South Carolina, I'm sure y'all had the booking program. I read Mad Judy Bloom and Beverly Clearly growing up. You know,
Me too.
Like reading. I'm like, everybody can't read? I had no idea with so many people who couldn't read. So it just made me feel bad. So that was just something I was like, you know what, I'm never going to do anything like that ever again.
So you're known for your audacity. You're known for this tension. Do you enjoy polarizing people?
Do I enjoy polarizing people? I love polarizing people because I feel like polarizing people are being the most honest. Because I feel like if somebody's telling you everything that you want to hear, they're probably lying to you, you know? So I feel like when somebody's being honest, you're going to get both those emotions. I believe in the rule of 10. Three people going to like it. Three people not going to like it. Four people not even going to care. They're just going to be on the fence about it. You know, and my father would always tell me, you're never as good as they say you are, and you're never as bad as they say you are. So I feel like as long as it's coming from a good place, you know, and I'm not being malicious, and I'm just honestly speaking my honest opinion, it probably will separate some people. Like, I don't play to the orchestra, you know what I mean? They say in order to lead the orchestra, you got to turn your back on the crowd. I've never done that. I'm not going to sit here and just tell you everything that you want to hear, you know? And I would hope nobody would do that to me.
Do you enjoy being a polarizing person?
No.
You polarize people. You make people love and hate and, you know, there's very opposite spectrums of how people...
Yes.
Well, and the extremes and reading comments and just seeing how people react to you, it's such a visceral reaction. People are so emotional. You know, they like love you, celebrate you, and there's just people who are like...
I hate him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't enjoy doing it because I don't think about doing it. You know,
so you don't know that you're doing it, or you do know you're doing it.
I mean, I know I'm doing it when I see people arguing about it, debating about it. But like I said, that's natural. You know, like I think that's the way the world is. If I put an opinion out here right now, two people are going to see it two totally different ways, and they're going to debate it. It's not something I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to be a contrarian. You know, like I said, I don't feel like there's any value in shock whatsoever. You know, now, do I like to shake people up? Yes. I can give you a prime example of how I like to shake people up. If we're talking about racism in America, it's these blatant acts of racism that people can just see.
Right, right.
Right? So I like to separate good white people, people who I call white allies, and I like to separate the racist bigots. So sometimes in order to do that, you have to use some racy language. Mm-hmm. So I will call a racist bigot a crack-ass cracker or a white devil. Sometimes people get more mad at those slurs than they do what the person actually did. So what I like to tell people is, if you're more mad at me for using the slurs than the act of racism this person committed, you're part of the problem. So that's what I like for people to think about. So if that is considered polarizing people, yes, I enjoy that very much.
Do you think that your message is one of positivity or negativity?
Depends. You know, I think it can be positive at times, negative at others. Just depends on how you look at it. Like for me, I'm the type of person that I want everybody to be held accountable for their words. I think that we really live in a society right now where people feel like they can say anything.
Yeah. Including yourself.
Including myself. Yeah. But the difference between me and everybody else is I understand freedom of speech, but I understand that, you know, there's a cost to freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And if you're not ready...
'Cause you've paid it yourself?
Yeah. And if you're not ready to pay, then shut the fuck up. You know, so it's just like I have to be, you know, ready to deal with whatever consequences come back to me from the things that I've said. I don't think a lot of these kids out here realize that. I think that they think that they can say whatever they want and then there's no consequence to their actions. That's why sometimes I like seeing people get beat up. So that could be considered negative. You reacted the way you felt it was necessary to react.
Yeah.
So I can't be upset at you about that. But some people think that's negative when I say that. It's like, oh, you're condoning violence. No, I'm not. I'm condoning people to watch their mouth because you don't know how people are going to react.
A lot of people could argue that you have had many disrespectful moments to women and to gay people or to trans people or to whomever. How do you justify that in your mind?
And has that changed?
Oh, yeah, it's changed a lot. I agree with them. Wholeheartedly, and that's part of it too. When you go back and you look at, like, you know, it was a video that my radio station cut up called Charlamagne Tha God's Most Savage Moments.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you look back, that's 8 years ago, and I'm like, yo, what the fuck was I thinking, you know? But that rhetoric changed 3-4 years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, why? Because just like in the movie Private Parts, when Howard Stern's wife checked him, my wife checked me. And it's like, you not gonna be on the radio, you know, telling girls you wanna suck a fart out their butt. Well, I had friends that would say, yo, you need to stop saying that, you know, vintage vagina. I would always say that about any woman that's 40 and up who's aging like wine and not milk. And I'd be like, well, why? And they'd be like, because, you know, you want to reduce a woman to their body parts. It's just like, oh. Like, it's just certain things I never...
So you didn't think about it?
No, yeah. Not at all. I grew up, and I'm not blaming anything, but I grew up in hip-hop. I grew up in pop culture. Like, I'm 40. I grew up in the era of Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, and seriously, and Dr. Dre's Nothing But a G-Thing video, mm-hmm. and Nelly Tip Drill. I was going to Myrtle Beach, you know, Black Bike Weekend. Yep. You know what I mean? Freaknik in Atlanta. Like, though, for us to sit around and act like the culture hasn't changed a lot, and a lot of us men just have to unlearn a lot of the bullshit we learned, we're lying to ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we're lying to ourselves. So it's just like, that's just, you know, something that came with growth, came with evolution. And I'll be the first to say I wouldn't change any of that. And the reason I wouldn't change any of that is because I want to be the person that tells us we can evolve, tells men we can grow, you know? Like, I mean, I've gotten in trouble for having unrefined conversations about rape culture, because mm-hmm. rape culture was a new thing to me. Like, I hadn't heard about it until 3-4 years ago. So when I would sit around in my podcast and try to have these conversations, I got in trouble for things that I said unintentionally. Like, right. if I'm sitting there having a conversation about, you know, my wife and the first time me and her had sex and we were super drunk and like you know, I'm looking at Teen Vogue had a question, the headline was like, is drunk sex rape? And where, you know, I'm having those conversations, yo, they were unrefined, came out wrong. 3 years later, they come back to bite me. But guess what I learned from that? Number one, you can't have those conversations with a bunch of men in the room. Okay. Number two, you definitely can't have those conversations when one of your friends is a comedian. And number three, it's a way to talk about all those things in a refined way to where you don't trigger people who've actually been in those situations and been the woman who was drunk and got sexually assaulted. So it's just like, yo, you live and you learn. And there's nothing I can do but, you know, do better. Like, you know, the best apology is change behavior. I was moving in that direction long before anything came back to bite me.
I think it's very hard to put your finger on you. You can't define you in a lot of ways.
The internet makes that hard too, though, right? When you have magazines like Rolling Stone or New York Times and they say things like, oh, Charlamagne is the hip-hop Howard Stern, and you've been studying guys like Stern your whole life, sometimes you can get caught up in a shtick. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, this is the route I want to go, or this is the way that I should do things. So, you know, and then you look back and you be like, nah, bro, you just look like a pervert. Like, you just look like misogynistic, chauvinistic, sexist pig. And but even still, when I go back and I watch old Howard stuff, I think the same, like, damn.
When you go back and you look at your old stuff, do you think that about yourself?
Oh, 100%. Like, I'm just, it's embarrassing. I'm just being honest, I'm ashamed of it. Like, it's like, I don't want my daughter to ever see this. Even though I'm going to always be honest with her, you know what I mean? I'm always honest with her. I want her mom to be honest with her about everything. I need context for everything. Because sometimes you can watch something out of context and be like, what the hell did he just say? Or what? Why is he doing that? So if she don't have the proper context, I don't want her later on in life, which is right around the corner, by the way.
Yeah.
She's 10. So it's
and
like,
she's going to have her friends be like, your dad is what?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's just like, it is. It's embarrassing. It's shameful.
What kind of person do you want to be for your daughters?
I want to be the kind of person that I would want to see my daughters with. You know, I want to be that kind of man. I want to be the man that's going to protect her, going to provide for her, going to look at her as an equal. I'm not into that whole, you want a woman that submits to you. You know, if anything, I want us to submit to each other. Mm. You know, I submit to my wife. Submit has such a negative connotation to it sometimes. You know, you think like submit means servitude, right. You know? I guess it is kind of servitude though, because I do want to serve my wife, I guess. I just want my daughter to be with somebody that's going to treat them the way that I treat them. That's why it's so important for fathers to show their daughters that love, because like I'm telling you, I got a lot of homegirls who grew up with no pops. And I can see how the lack of not having a father in their life affects them. Like, I got homegirls whose mothers tell me she got a daddy complex. Like, she's looking for a father, not a boyfriend. I'm like, wow. And that's just things I never thought about growing up. It's a lot of things I never thought about growing up.
Do you struggle with being disliked?
No. I fully embrace it simply because I know everything is not for everybody. You know, I think everything is subjective. I'm more concerned when people who actually know me dislike me. You know, if I actually met you and we sat down and had a conversation, you know, and you leave and you're like, oh, I don't like that guy. Wow. That's, you know, because nowadays we don't know these people that talk to us on social media. So 95% of the people who say they dislike me are on social media. I don't get that in my everyday life. Plus, I've never really struggled with it too much. I think it was more so I, when you say you want to fit in school, I guess you're concerned about who likes you and who doesn't like you. Mm-hmm. But then you're kind of not, because I grew up like where I was, you know, with all the white kids. And the reason I was with all the white kids, because I was in advanced classes when I was young, you know, first grade to about fifth grade, sixth grade. But then when I moved to Monk's Corner and I was around all my cousins who were thugging, you know, and they were upset at me for hanging with all the white kids and used to bully me because I used to wear glasses and had a fanny pack and all kind of stuff. It got to the point where it was like,
pack. What?
I was torn because I was like, okay, I'm hanging with these white kids all the time. And this is who I enjoy being around. And, you know, my thug cousins are always pressing me and bullying me. So it comes to the point where I got to choose because I don't like when my thug cousins come around because they make my white friends uncomfortable. But then me being around white friends make my thug friends uncomfortable. So I got to choose the person that could actually beat me up. So I started rolling with the thugs. So at that point, I was like, I don't care that these white kids don't like me no more. I just don't want to get beat up. So it's a survival method. And I think sometimes we got to detach from that being a survival tactic. Like a lot of times we want to be a part of a crowd or we want people to like us because it helps us to get through life. It helps us to survive. Like I don't necessarily want to be able to have that. Like I want to go sit in my backyard in my pergola by myself and be comfortable with just me being there. No phone, no social media interaction, like just me and a book, and I am comfortable in my head. Like, I'm the person that's going to do the work on myself. I'm the one that's going to therapy. I'm doing this work, so I'm more comfortable in here.
What is the most complicated feeling that you're dealing with in therapy right now?
Oh, man. The scrutiny of everything. Everybody's looking at you through a microscope now and a magnifying glass. And, like, I remember telling my wife, like, a year ago, like, yo, the worst feeling in the world is knowing that people are sitting around plotting on your demise. Mm-hmm. like sitting around waiting for you to slip mm-hmm. up, waiting for you to fuck up, waiting for you to fall. And my problem with the era that we live in now, Stephen Furtick, Pastor Stephen Furtick, who's also from Monk's Corner, South Carolina, he says that social media is everybody's highlight reel. So mm-hmm. nobody on social media is posting their mistakes. Nobody mm-hmm. on social media is posting their yeah. flaws. Everything mm-hmm. looks so picture perfect. I learned from everybody else's mistakes growing up. Of course, I made my own mistakes, but when I read a book like The Autobiography of Malcolm X and I look at who this man evolved into, you know, from Malcolm Little and everything that he was in, you know, the pimping, the drug selling, the drug using, going to prison, but evolving into the man he became. Yo, that's inspiring to me. But you got to allow people to be vulnerable. You got to allow people to share their flaws, share their mistakes without judgment. We love to bounce back, right? Mm-hmm. That's what life is all about. Life is all about
the comeback.
The comeback.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore. So imagine being 15 and you make that one mistake and you don't see nobody else around you making a mistake.
Yeah.
You probably feel like you want to kill yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I think anxiety is the number one mental illness in the U.S. right now because of that anxiousness to always be perfect. We're painting a picture of perfection that is just unattainable in America right now.
What is the most audacious thing that you have done in your adult life?
The reason that's such an interesting question is because I feel like the original seed of audacity that was planted in my mind was me being raised on a dirt road in Monk's Corner, South Carolina, population 7,000 people, and having the audacity to think that I could be the biggest multimedia personality in the world. To have the audacity to think that I could one day be on the level of the Howard Sterns or the Steve Harveys or the Tom Joyners, all these people I grew up listening to. Like the audacity of me to think that. Why? I have no reason to think that. I have no reason to believe that. Like there was nobody around me that was doing anything remotely close to what I'm doing now. Like I didn't have any examples of that type of success around me. So why did I have the audacity to believe that? So it's just like in my adult life, I think the only audacity I have now is I guess the same audacity I had then, which is the audacity to think that I can actually change the world in some way, shape, or form. I mean, that's the reason I wanted to be in media to begin with, because I feel like the person who controls the media controls the minds of the masses. So I guess the audacity of me is to think that I can actually impact the world in a very productive way, like actually shift culture and move culture forward.
In what way do you want to move culture forward?
I want to move culture forward in the sense of empowering each other. We're all human beings living on the planet Earth, right? Whether we believe it or not, we all need each other. Whether you're black, white, male, female, gay, straight, like we're all going through this journey and this process of life together. So we need to be together. And I think that we have to weed out all the bad seeds and all the positive seeds have to come together and just link up and continue to move the culture forward. And I just think that the empowerment comes from instilling the right things in men. You know, women got to instill the right things in women. Black people got to instill the right things in black people. We all got to instill the right things within each other. And I don't think that happens if we keep bullshitting each other.
You've said that other people think that you're successful because you're fearless.
Mm-hmm.
But you've said you're successful because you're scared.
Absolutely.
What are you scared of?
I'm scared of just failing. You know, the first thing my father ever told me when I was getting in a whole lot of trouble was, if you don't change your lifestyle, you're going to end up in jail, dead, or broke sitting under the tree. You know, I was always a very observant person. So when I started to see people around me actually getting killed, I saw people around me actually going to prison. And then when I started going to jail myself, and then I started seeing like these older cousins and people that I used to actually look up to and want to be really sitting under the tree, broke, doing nothing with their life, that scared the hell out of me. And so it's like, that's what made me change my lifestyle. That's what made me say, you know what, I'm not doing the street stuff no more. I'm going to go get me a job. I worked at Taco Bell. I worked at a clothing store called Demo in the Mall. I worked at a flower garden. I worked at a warehouse. I did telemarketing. I was the guy that would call your house and try to sell you 10 CDs for a penny. I did whatever I had to do to stay out of the street because I was scared.
That is the past. But what are you scared of now?
I'm scared of like...
losing it all?
Yeah. And I think even bigger than all that, I'm afraid to let God down, whatever you call God, Allah, Jehovah, whatever the higher power is, I'm afraid that he has blessed me and put me in a certain position. And if I don't do what it is that I'm supposed to do, he's going to take it all away. I really feel that way. I really feel like when you're given certain blessings, you have to do the right things with them. It's almost like that. Remember that old show, Quantum Leap?
Mm-hmm.
I used to love Quantum Leap. You know, I used to love Quantum Leap because he could not leave out of the person's body until he learned whatever lesson it was he was supposed to learn. And he helped that person get to where they were supposed to be. So I feel like if I'm not constantly learning these lessons, I feel like I go through all of this stuff just to learn a certain lesson. And when I go through that lesson, it is my duty to teach that lesson to other people. I think that certain things happen to you because it's God actually working through you. And I truly, honestly believe that. So I feel that the fear is really a fear of a higher power and not doing what it is that I'm supposed to be doing.
So in your book, you write, fuck your dreams if it's not yours. You also tell people to be realistic about what they are capable of accomplishing.
Yes.
Do you not believe that we can all be or accomplish what we want?
I think you can be anything you want to be if it's actually what you want to be. I think that sometimes, especially when you're a young black person from the hood, the people you see that look like you who are successful are usually in entertainment or athletics. And if you look at the percentage of people who are actually successful in those fields, it's literally like one in 2 billion. It's like you bet off playing the Powerball Mega Millions. Like, you got a better chance of winning the Powerball Mega Millions than you do being successful in those fields. And I'm like, yo, man, we got enough entertainers and we got enough athletes. If you don't have a real gift, if you're not really skilled, go figure out what it is that you want to do. Because I really, truly feel like we all have something inside of us that God gave us. You know, it's like a big old Christmas tree and it's a present under that tree for everybody in the world. And that one gift can change your whole life. Some people get discouraged. Some people find theirs before others. Some people are so busy watching other people who find their gift that they're angry and they're jealous and they're envious. But if you just keep searching, you'll find that gift that will change your life. So when I tell people F their dreams, I really mean F your dream if it's not your dream. Because sometimes you see something working for somebody else.
And you go for it, yeah.
And you think, oh, that's what I want to do too. Mm-hmm. But that's not your dream. That's just something you saw working for somebody else.
What's your gift?
Really, truthfully, probably just the audacity to feel like I could do something great. I don't know, man. And it's something else that I've been questioning myself about. I don't know if I truly have a gift? Is the gift of gab a gift?
Yeah.
Is it? Is being able to run your mouth a gift? Like, is being transparent a gift? I don't know. Is being honest a gift? I don't know. And the only reason I'm saying all of these things.
Virtues and vices, yeah.
Only reason I'm saying all of those things is because that's what I've been reading about myself the past 8 years. Because those are things I never thought about. But then you read things about yourself and why people enjoy you and then intrigued by you, I guess. Even while people don't like you, it's because of those. Oh, he's honest, and he's honest to a fault, and you know he's engaging. And I'm like, am I really? Because sometimes I'm sitting there talking to y'all now, like I am boring the fuck out of you. Okay, so I don't.
No, we're listening.
I don't know. But I will say this: I don't know what my gift is, but I can say that I would like to be a gift to other people. Meaning that I would like my presence to be a blessing to others, and the way to be a blessing to others is through service. I'm here to help. You know, I truly feel like I'm a public servant. That's what I feel like being a radio personality is. That's what I feel like being a DJ is. Like, that's what I feel like being a teacher is, a guidance counselor. Like, I'm just here to help other people.
We're going to do the fill in the blank, and then we're out.
Make it super quick.
All right, let's do it.
My motto is?
Keep God first, stay humble, keep working.
The world would be better if?
The world would be better if everybody stopped being prejudiced. Everybody.
I'm not very good at.
I'm not very good at lying.
It bothers me when?
It bothers me when people are prejudiced and other people act like they can't see the prejudice that people are experiencing.
The biggest misconception about me is?
The biggest misconception about me is there is no misconceptions. And this is something that I've thought about. I've actually talked to my therapist about this because everybody's perception of me, I probably did something for them to have that perception. So I can't say it's a misconception because that's what I gave off that they saw that created that perception. So I can't tell you that you have a misconception of me. I would have to ask you, why do you feel that way? And then when you tell me, I can be like, oh, and 9 times out of 10, I probably can see why you feel that way.
Someday I'm going to
delete all my social media apps and really, 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 truly not give a fuck what people think about me. Because as long as you have social media apps, you care about what people think about you.
If you're inspired by this episode and ready to turn your vices into virtues, get your hands on a copy of our explosive new book, Rare Breed, A Guide to Success for the Defiant, Dangerous, and Different. It's available at thisisrarebreed.com and wherever you buy books. You can also listen to all of our Rare Breed interviews with celebrities, misfits, oddballs, and entrepreneurs at thisisrarebreed.com/interviews. Be sure to share this podcast, tell your friends, and join us on social at This Is Rare Breed.
Remember those simple rules of office etiquette, and you'll get along in the business world.